Okay, a good tovach, everybody. Today's daf is Shabbos daf Tzadi Tes. We left off on daf Tzadi Chesam Beis. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. Thank you all for joining on this Motzai Shabbos. So we left off at Tan Rabbanan on the bottom line of Daf Tzadi Chesam Beis. The Gemara is going to discuss the curtains of the Mishkan, what they looked like. We already discussed their dimensions and how they covered the Mishkan according to each Shita. Now we're going to discuss how they were made and what they looked like. The Gemara is then going to talk about the dimensions of the Agalos, the wagons that actually carried the boards of the Mishkan, and then we're going to have a Mishnah on Amud Aleph that's going to talk about a bar or a rock with dimensions of a Rishus HaYachid, and how if you throw from Rishus HaRabim into such a bar or on top of such a rock, that you're going to be Chayav for Hotza'ah. And then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss three different interesting Shailas. Shaila number one, if you throw from Rishus HaRabim to the top of let's say a post that has the dimensions of Rishus HaYachid, are you chayiv? Because after all, in order to get on top of that post, it had to travel through airspace that was more than 10 tefachim above the Rishus HaRabim ground, which means it's traveling through makom patur, airspace. So you're going to be chayiv if you throw from a Rishus HaRabim onto a post that itself is a Rishus HaYachid, but it had to travel through airspace that was that was a makom patur. That's going to be shaila number one. Shaila number two that we're going to have on Amud Beis is, what happens when you have a wall that surrounds an area, turning that area into a Rishus HaYachid, does the wall itself also become a Rishus HaYachid? What if you throw something and it lands on the wall? The wall is not four tefachim wide, but does the wall itself, by virtue of the fact that it makes the area it surrounds a Rishus HaYachid, does it become a Rishus HaYachid itself? And then shaila number three we're going to deal with on Amud Beis is when the act of Akira or Hanacha changes the halachic status of that Rishus. So how do we view it? Meaning, let's say you had a bar that was nine tefachim deep, and then you dug out dirt, a tefach worth of dirt from the bottom of the bar, and you threw it out into a Rishus HaRabim. Where did that tefach of dirt come from? From a Rishus HaYachid? It wasn't 10 tefachim deep when you started the digging, but when you pulled it out, what you left behind was a Rishus HaYachid, because it was 10 tefachim deep. So what's the status of such an event, such a maisa? So that's going to be the third discussion we're going to have on Amud Beis. So let's begin at the bottom of Daf Tzadi Chesam Beis, last line, Tanu Rabbanan. Charutzim, how you crush him? The crushim of the Mishkan had pegs sticking out of them, meaning they were chiseled in such a way where there were protrusions from the bottom of the crushim. The chalulim hayu adonim, and the adonim had like the female piece. They had a hollow area so that the pegs of the crushim of the boards could fit neatly directly into the adonim. Vinirin krasin belulaos kikochavim berakia, and the hooks in the loops that held the curtains together, they looked like stars in the sky because they had a shine to them. And we discussed just yesterday how all of the different curtains were 10 different curtains or 11 different curtains that were held together, and they were held together by these hooks and these loops that held them together. So those hooks and loops didn't detract from the look of the curtains. Adrabah, it made the curtains look like they had these shiny spots on them, like stars shining in the sky. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to, the Bryce is going to describe a little bit what the Urios looked like. Urios hatachtonos, the Urios that were on the bottom, the lower layer of Urios, shel tcheles, vishel argaman, vishel tola ashani, vishel sheish. They were made out of wool that was dyed with tcheles, with a blue dye, and with argaman, a purple dye, which is made from the same dye as tcheles, just at a different stage of the dyeing, and tola ashani, which is a red dye, and also was made of sheish. The elyonos and the upper curtains of the Mishkan shel maisi izim were spun from goat's hair. Ugedola chachma shnemer belyonos yosir mashnemer betachtonos. And you might think the very colorful curtain, that must be the one that's challenging to make. Says the Gemara, no. The chachma that it took to make the upper curtain was greater than the Chachma took to make the colorful curtain, which was the lower curtain. Dilu b'tachtonos ksiv, because in describing the Chachma that it took to make the lower curtains, the Pasuk says, v'kol isha Chachma slave biyadeha tavu, it just describes the women who made it as isha Chachma slave, that hand spun these curtains. V'ilu be'elyonos ksiv, but in describing the upper curtains that were made out of goat hair, look at how expressive the Pasuk is. V'kol anashim asher nasa liban osana b'chachma tavu asi'izam. It wasn't just Chachma slave, it was nasa liban osana, that their hearts were elevated with the knowledge of how to do this, of how to make such curtains. Why? What was so difficult about spinning some goat's hair in order to make curtains? V'tanya mishum Rabbi Nechemya shatuf b'izim v'tavoy mina izim. They would wash the goat hair while it was still on the goat, and they would spin it directly from the goat, meaning they didn't pull it off of the goat or kill the goat first. They would spin it directly from the live goat, because once the goat is dead, some of the glean, some of the shine, some of the quality of its coat is lost. So they wanted to capture in its with the highest quality, with the greatest effect. They wanted to capture that goat hair. So that's what they would do in order to make these curtains. So you can imagine that's a much more challenging job than just dyeing wool that was already shorn off of a sheep. So then we had mentioned in the Mishnah that if you have two ledges on the same side of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but the two ledges protrude out from Rosh Hashanah Yachid, so to pass from one to the other over the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is going to be us, because that's exactly what they did in the Mishkan. So Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia, Agolos, now, why is it exactly what they did in the Mishkan? Because they had two wagons, one in front of the other, and they would pass the boards from one to the other. So now we're going to discuss those wagons a little bit, what the dimensions of the wagons were, and how the boards were. We already discussed a little bit about how the boards were arranged on those wagons and how much space there was between the boards, but now we're going to talk about the wagons themselves a little bit more. So Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia, Agolos Tachteinu Beinein V'Tzideihen Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. The wagons, the area underneath them, the area between them, and on the sides of the wagons had a status of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Amra Abaye, Bein Agola La Agola, Kimelo Orech Agola. Between one wagon and the one behind it, there was the full length of a wagon in between them. So they left a full wagon's length of space, of empty space, between one wagon and the next wagon. V'kama Orech Agola, how much is that? How much space is that? Hey Amos, 5 Amos. So what we see from here is that each wagon was 5 Amos long. So Lamali, Bedalu Palgasagi, why did each wagon have to be 5 Amos long? If they had 3 sets of boards that were laying across them width-wise, and the width of each board was an am and a half, so it only really needed to be 4.5 amos long. Why did the wagons need to be 5 amos long? So kihechi delo lidchuku krushim, because we didn't want that the krushim would be one right up against the other, and then they would crash into each other, and it would be a problem. So in order that the krushim shouldn't crash into each other and cause them to become less steady, so they had to have a little bit of spacing between the crushim. Amar Rava, Tzidei Agala, so now we're going to look at the width of the wagons. Tzidei Agala, Kimelo Rochav Agala, the sides of the wagons, meaning from where the wagon wall ended to where the wheel, which protruded outside of the wagons, to where the wheel ended, was as wide as the wagon itself, meaning as wide as the width of the inside of the wagon walls was the equivalent of how much space there was from the wagon walls to where the wheels ended beyond the wagon walls. So that was the same amount of space. Rashi understands that this means that if the wagon itself was 2.5 amos wide, each wheel on each side was another amma and a quarter. So another amma and a quarter on this side, another amma and a quarter on this side, that's another 2.5 amos for a total of 5 amos across. That's the way Rashi understands it. Tosos understands differently, but that's how Rashi understands it. Tosos understands that it's 2.5 amos is the width of the wagon, and each wheel is the same width as the wagon itself, meaning from the wall of from the right side of the wagon to the right wall of the wagon to the right wheel of the wagon is another 2.5 amos. From the left wall of the wagon to the left wheel of the wagon is another 2.5 amos, which means altogether the wagon is 7.5 amos, not 5 amos. That's how Tosus understands, that the full width of the wagon is going to be 7.5 amos, whereas Rashi understands that the full width of the wagon is going to be 5 amos. So let's stick with Rashi for now, and then we'll explain all of Tosus' problems with Rashi. But we're going to stick with Rashi for now. So again, so we said that Amar Rav Tzidei Agala Kamilo Rochav Agala, the area on the side of the wagons that goes to the end of the wheel is as wide as the wagon itself. And again, the way Rashi understands that is that when you add both sides of the wagon, the wheels on both sides of the wagon together, that equals the width of the wagon itself, of the inner part of the wagon. V'kama Rochav Agala, how wide is the wagon itself? Shtei Amos Mech, so it's 2.5 amos. So Lamali, why do you need 2.5 amos? Bam so palgasagya. All the wagon really needed to be was 1.5 amos, because if you wanted to somehow stand up the boards at some point in the wagon, the narrowest part of the board is 1 amma, because remember we discussed it's 1 amma by 1.5 amos by 10 amos tall. So if they only needed an amma and a half to give some wiggle room to put the 1 amma end, the 1 amma edge into the wagon. So why did they need to make sure that it was 2.5 amos wide? Says Mar Kiechi Duloli Dadu Krushim, because if it were less than 2.5 amos wide, when they ran these 10 amma boards across the width of the wagon and then they traveled with it, it would like teeter a lot. It would be like a seesaw. It's not enough to give a stable base if it was only 1.5 amos wide. So they needed it to be 2.5 amos wide, so it would be a more stable base, and it's not going to the boards aren't going to teeter one way or the other. That's why it was important that it be 2.5 amos. That it be 2.5 amos wide. El dekaimelon derech rosh hasharam sheish esrei amma. So I asked the Gemara, well, wait a second. We paskin that in order to have rosh hasharam, you need to be 16 amos wide. And then the gamri lami mishkan, the mishkan chamisri avai. But the mishkan apparently was only 15 amos, because if you had two wagons next to each other and the space between the wagons was as large as the wagon itself, and according to Rashi, what did we say? Each wagon, yes, the inner part of the wagon was 2.5 amos wide, but when you account for the wheels on the sides of the wagon, it's a total of 5 amos wide. So you have a wagon of 5 amos, another wagon of 5 amos, and 5 amos in between them. So that's a total of 15 amos from side to side in a Rosh Hasharab. And where do we get 16 amos as being the bare minimum size of a Rosh Hasharab? Says Gemara, Amsa Yasei Ravai Davakai Ben Levi, the Chimishtal Shvi Krushim have a Nakatluhu. They had an extra amma so that a Levi would be there in case any of the boards would start to fall off. He'd be able to pick it back up. So they needed a space for the Levi to sneak in there to make sure that the boards were in fact stable. Tosos has many, many problems with this explanation of Rashi. First of all, most fundamentally, Rashi understands two wagons side by side. Each wagon was supporting their own boards of the Mishkan. The boards of the Mishkan were 10 amos long. So aren't the boards going to bang into each other constantly if the two wagons are side by side? Two 10 amma boards side by side is 20 amos. So that's not going to work, right? So that's the most fundamental problem Tosus has with Rashi. Also, Tosus says, structurally, it's unsound, right? The Gemara says, oh, it can't just be 1.5 amma base to hold a 10 amma board. Oh, but a 2.5 amma base, that's going to work. Says Tosus, no, it won't. These boards were very, very heavy. You have a 2.5 amma base, and then you have, think about it, each board was 10 amos. That means almost 4 amos of overhang on each side of the wagon. That's way too much. That's not a way to make a stable, moving vehicle to carry the boards. That's not going to work, Tosus says. So Tosus has major problems with this understanding of Rashi. Tosus says instead, what really happened was that a wagon would not hold its own boards of the Mishkan. By the way, in terms of the stability, Tosus says, and think about it, we had two shitos about whether the boards were even in width all the way from top to bottom. According to one shita, it narrows as it gets to the top, to the point where it's only an etzba wide. Can you imagine the weight difference between one side of the board and the other side of the board? So if you're running them across the width of the wagon, and one side of the board is way lighter than the other side of the board, and the wagon is only 2.5 amos wide, so of course it's going to be an uneven weight distribution. Of course it's going to be unstable, Tosus says. So Tosus says, no, what happened over here was that they had two wagons side by side, wheels touching, mamish side by side. and they ran the boards across both wagons. So two wagons together would hold the boards of the Mishkan. How did that help? Tosel says also the wheels on each side of each wagon, each side of the wagon, were 2.5 amos wide. So if you have a wagon that's 2.5 amos width of the wagon itself, plus 2.5 amos of wheels on one side, 2.5 amos of wheels on the other side, then another wagon with the equivalent measurements, and you put them side by side from end to end, from the right wheel on the right wagon to the left wheel on the left wagon is 15 amos. It's 15 amos. Now, from the right board on the right wagon to the left board on the left wagon is going to be exactly 10 amos, exactly 10, because you knocked out the 2.5 amos of the side wheels. Exactly 10 amos, which is the perfect size to hold a 10 amo board with great stability. And that's how they did it. They would have a 10 amo board with perfect stability that was running on, that went across two wagons. And the Gemara then asks, but what did you need? Where did that extra amo come from? So that's where you needed the guy to come in, the Levi to come in and fix it. So Tosfos says, but how's the Levi going to reach it? Miss Tummy's coming in on one of the sides, and the board is 2.5 amos away from him if he's coming in on one of the sides, right? Because the board is two, it only starts at the wall of the wagon, and from the wall to wheel is 2.5 amos. So it says, yeah, he reached over. He would reach over to get to that board. But that's how Tosos understands the Gemara. Even the entire comparison to deriving all the halachos of Rosh Hashanah based on wagons and the animals that pulled the wagons and how much space they required was the source of a great chiddush of Rav Menashe Klein. Rav Menashe Klein had some important tshuvas that need to be studied when one studies Erevin, because when it came to the Flatbush Erev, Rav Moshe Feinstein very famously rejected it. He rejected the Erev. He thought it was Rosh Ram Dara, Ocean Parkway is Rosh Ram Daraisa, and therefore there's no way to make an Erev over there. And Rav Menashe Klein accepted it. After Rav Moshe rejected it, they went to Rav Menashe Klein accepted it, and he yelled that it does not have Ocean Parkway, it does not have a din of Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. One of his arguments as to why it's not Rosh Hashanah Daraisa is based on this Gemara. Why? How so? So Rav Menashe Klein suggests a great chiddush. He says when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, any area that horses and wagons are not allowed is not considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbim Daraisa. If they don't allow horses and wagons, even though they allow Mack trucks to pass through, but if horses and wagons are not allowed, it is not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim Midaraisa. What's it based on? Well, the Mishnah Maseches Peah, in the second parak of Peah, talks about how we know when something is one field versus when it's considered to be two separate fields as far as the Halacha of Peah goes. You have to leave the corner of a field for Aniyim to be able to come to take. So it says that when it comes to fields for Peah, that Derech HaRabim and a Shvil HaRabim are both mafsik between fields for Peah. So the Rashbam writes, what's the difference between a Shvil HaRabim and a Derech HaRabim? A Shvil HaRabim is where a lot of people walk. It's a walking path. A Derech HaRabim is a place where Agolos Vesusim, where wagons and horse go. So you see that a place that wagons and horses do not go, and only people go by foot, is not called a Derech HaRabim. That's step one. Then says Rav Menashe Klein, why is that so? Why would we not call something a Derech HaRabim just because wagons and horses don't go there? He says, because in the Midbar, they wouldn't have considered such an area Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Only that which was the area where they carried the Krashei HaMishkan with the wagons and the oxen, only that would be considered Rosh Hashanah Rabim. So Derech HaRabim is a place where Agolos and Susim go, where wagons and horses go, like our Sugya says, and the entire shear of 16 amos is derived from that, from how much space they needed in order for the wagons and the boards and the levy that was going to come and support the boards if they were going to fall. So since the shear of Rosh Hashanah Rabim is derived from that, from how much space the Agolos and the Shvarim needed, so we see from there that Rosh Hashanah Rabim is only a place that Agolos and Susim go, and a Ben Levi to be Masakin the Krashim, just like the Digle Midbar. So when the Torah asks Hotzah and Achnasa, it's a place where people go, La Vodasa, masam ba'agolos v'susim and kol aroyze l'zeh. But anything that's not doma l'digle midbar is not going to have a status of Rosh Hashanah v'dar raisa. And with that, he says, I can answer a major kasha that the Rishonim asked. The Rishonim asked, according to the Shita, that a Rosh Hashanah is only when Shishim Ribo come, like the Digle Midbar. If that's the case, so the Rishonim asked, Shishim Ribo were only the men when it came to the Midbar. There were 3 million Jews. There weren't just Shishim Ribo Jews. How come Rosh Hashanah is defined as Shishim Ribo? It should be defined as 3 million. That's what we should require in order for something to be Rosh Hashanah Daraisa. So says Rav Menashe Klein, I've just solved it. Because Rosh Hashanah is defined as where the wagons and the horses and the business people would go. The women and the children, they weren't involved in doing business or in schlepping things on wagons or anything like that. So Mela, they're excluded from the cheshbon of what's considered Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, he says, if you have a street where Agolos and Susim are not allowed to go, it's not considered Rosh Hashanah, even if you have 600,000 people that go there without Agolos and Susim, because it's not Doma L'Digle Midbar. And he says, L'Chora, according to that, we don't have Rosh Hashanah anymore, because we already got rid of all the horses and the wagons from our roadways, and even people are not allowed to walk in our Rosh Hashanah, and they have to walk on the sidewalks. They have a special area on the side. So it doesn't matter that there are Mack trucks and cars and trains and everything else. It doesn't make a difference. If there are no Agolos and Susim, this is the Chiddush that Rav Menashe Klein says. It's not his only smach that it's not a Rosh Hashanah, but that's one of the more creative ones. So that's why he held that it didn't have a din of a Rosh Hashanah d'oraisa. Okay, so says the Mishnah now. We're up to the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadi Tesem Ralf. Chulias habor v'hasela shein gavo v'nasara v'rach v'narba'a hanotu ne'en v'anosin al gabon chayav pachos mikein pater. If let's say you have a bar and the area of dirt that's raised above the level of the bar, because when you dig a bar, a lot of times you'll take the dirt that you're digging out and you'll put it around the edge of the bar, so the bar is not only its depth, it's also the height of the dirt that's around the bar. So if let's say you have chulias habar that rises to 10 tefachim from the bottom of the bar, and it's 4 tefachim wide, the bar is 4 tefachim wide, or you have just stam, a rock, that's 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide, if you take something from Rosh Hashanah and put it on that chulias habar, or you put it on that rock, that's going to be a violation of hachnasa from Rosh Hashanah into Rosh Hashanah. But if it doesn't meet those dimensions, if it's less than 10 tefachim high or less than 4 tefachim wide, so mele, it's not a Rosh Hashanah. The Rishonim are bothered, what's the chiddush? Of course, the dimensions of Rosh Hashanah. By now we know it's 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide. So what their mechadish is that the width of the bar does not have to be 4 tefachim in its own right. Even if the width of the bar is only 4 tefachim when you count the width of the chulya around it as well, even that is considered to be a Rosh Hashanah. By the sela, it's obvious, right? The whole post, the whole rock is one unit, so it's 10 tefachim high off the ground and 4 tefachim wide. But you might have thought that the bar, the bottom of the bar, has to be 4 tefachim wide. No, even if just across the top walls of the bar is 4 tefachim wide, that's enough for it to be considered Rosh Hashanah. Says Gemara, Lami l'misni chulias habar v'asela. Why does he have to say chulias habar v'asela l'misni habar v'asela? Why not just tell me a case of a bar? Why do you have to talk about the chulias habar, the area around the top of the bar? So m'sayei le'el Rabbi Yochanan, dam Rabbi Yochanan, bar v'chuliasa mitstarfen l'asara. As far as the height is concerned, the depth of the bar and the walls surrounding the top of the bar are mitstarif to the height of 10 tefachim. Tanya nami hachi, bar Rosh Hashanah mamuka asara, ruchava arba. We have a brisa that says just like this. It says a few other halachos first, but eventually it's going to say just like this, that if you have a bar that's 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, ein mimalanei mena b'shabbos. You're not allowed to fill water from that bar on Shabbos, because the bar is a Rosh Hashanah, and wherever you're bringing that water out to is a Rosh Hashanah. Elim kein, asla mechitza gavah asar tefachim. Unless you made a mechitza of 10 tefachim around the area that you want to bring the water to. Because if you made a mechitza 10 tefachim around the area they want to bring the water to, then that area becomes Rosh Hashanah as well. So then you could take from the bar into that area. Ve'in shosnei mena b'shabbos, even if you want to just dip your head into the bar to lap up some water from the bar, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Elam kei nichnasal rosh v'rubo. You need to have rosh v'rubo of your body, because even though you're not pulling any water out of the bar, we're afraid you're going to. We're afraid you're going to jerk your head back and you'll pull some water with you out of the bar. But once rosh v'rubo is in the bar, then we're not worried that you're going to do that. And then, so all of that was just parenthetical. The reason we're quoting this price is the next line, Ubar v'chuliyasa mitstarfen la'asara, and a bar and its chulia together equal the height of 10 tefachim in order to make up a Rosh Hashanah. So now, as we said when we started this year, we're going to have three major shailos on Amud Beis. Here is shaila number one that comes up here on Amud Beis. By Miner of Mordechai Meravar. Mordechai asks the following shaila of Rava. Amud Berush Hashem Gavoy Yud Varachav Dalid. Let's say you have a post in Rosh Hashem that's 10 tefachim tall, 4 tefachim wide. Vizorak v'nachal gabav, and you throw an item from the Rosh Hashem and it lands directly on that Rosh Hashayachid, on that post that is a Rosh Hashayachid. Mahu. Is that a violation of being machnis from the Rosh Hashem to the Rosh Hashayachid? So why not? Mi aminan harei akira be'isir, harei anach be'isir. The reason to assume that it would be a problem is that you did an akira from Rosh Hashem and anach onto Rosh Hashayachid. Of course it's a problem. Or maybe no. Because how do you get something onto the top of that 10 tefachai post? You must have thrown it more than 10 tefachim off of the ground of the Rosh Hashanah. The Rosh Hashanah's airspace only goes 10 tefachim high. Above that is a makom patur. Unlike a Rosh Hashanah, which is all out the rakia, the Rosh Hashanah goes all the way up to the sky. A Rosh Hashanah does not. So the only way to throw it, when I'm throwing from the street onto my driveway, so from Rosh Hashanah, okay, I could throw it all within 10 tefachim of the ground, then it will be a violation of achnasa. But if I'm throwing onto a post that's standing in the Rosh Hasharabim, or Rosh Hashayachid that's standing in the Rosh Hasharabim, it has to pass through a makom patur. So is that a violation? So I'm lay masnisini. He says, what are you talking about? It's our Mishnah. When Rav Mordechai asked this question to Rava, he said, it's our Mishnah. Beferish in our Mishnah. We said, if you have a sela, you have a rock that's in the Rosh Hashanah, that's 10 tefachim high, 4 tefachim wide, and you throw something from the Rosh Hashanah onto that rock, you're chayiv. So, of course. So, Asa Shaila Rav Yosef, he didn't like that answer, so he decided he was going to go to a different one of the Gedolei Amoraim. So, he tried Rav Yosef. So, Rav Yosef said, you got to open up the 11th parak of Masech HaShabbos. It's a Beferish Mishnah. He also pointed to the same Mishnah. So, he didn't like that answer. So, Asa Shaila Abaye. He didn't like Rav's answer. He didn't like Rav Yosef's answer. So he went and he asked Abaye. Armalei, masnisini. Abaye says, it's a Firsha Mishnah. What are you talking about? 11th Varakah, Masach HaShabbos. It says exactly that. So they all gave him the same answer. So at a certain point, you would think, you know, three of the Gedol, Abaye, Rava, you got them to agree on something, and Rav Yosef are all giving you the same answer as a Firsha Mishnah, you would think he would accept it. No, Tari Yivul Amaritzaruch, he's not accepting. Amalehu, Kulchu Baruch Ada Dodi Tafisu. He says, you're all spitting the same spit, meaning, you're all drinking the same Kool-Aid. Someone just told me after Marv that would be the American equivalent of that expression. You guys are all drinking the same Kool-Aid. You're all thinking the same in the same way, but it's not correct. Meaning, so they said, Vatlo Tizbro. So they said, what do you want from us? It's a Beferish Mishnah. How do you explain the Mishnah? Vatznan, Hanotel Mehen. It says Beferish in our Mishnah. What's the Bach changes? Hanotel Mehen, Vanosein Al Gabon Chayev. That if you take from this rock or put something on the rock, you're going to be chayiv. So isn't it exactly the Mishnah? So he says, no, two reasons why it's not. Well, we'll get to the two reasons. Amalei, dilma masnisin b'machat. Maybe the Mishnah's talking about where it's a needle, so a teeny little needle that you stick onto the post, so it never really had to go more than 10 tefachim off the ground. So he said, machat nami, yeshu dilma dalia porta. Wait a second, even a needle, it's very, very tiny, but it's if the post is 10 tefachim high, so then the needle had to go into airspace that's 10 tefachim plus a needle high. So it could be very close, but you know, Shirei Chacham Kenhu. So if it's a Makom Patur, even if it's just a teeny tiny drop above 10 Tefachim. So what kind of comment is that it's a needle? So the Gemara explains two possibilities. Either De Islei Morsha, there's a protrusion from the rock. The Mishnah might have been talking about a case. Yeah, the rock itself is 10 Tefachim high and 4 Tefachim wide, but there's a protrusion below the 10 Tefach area that sticks out of the rock, and the needle that you threw landed on that protrusion. So it never had to go 10 Tefachim off the ground in the Rosh Hashanah, and the protrusion is considered part of the Rosh Hashayachid because it's part of that rock. Or maybe there's a crevice in the rock and it landed inside that crevice, and the entire rock is considered Rosh Hashayachid, so landed in the rock. But that doesn't answer my shaila, says Rav Mordechai, where it had to go above 10 tefachim off the ground in order to land on the top of the post. So my shaila is still a shaila. Our Mishnah doesn't help with my shaila, says Rav Mordechai. So that was shaila number one. Amar Rav Misha, Boy Rav Yochanan. So Rav Misha says, Rav Yochanan had a shaila number two. Kosel Rosh Hashanah Gavah Asar Aveinu Rochav Arba'ah. Let's say you have a wall in Rosh Hashanah that's 10 tefachim high, but is less than 4 tefachim wide. So the wall itself would not constitute a Rosh Hashayachid. But Umukaf LeKarmelis, but it surrounds an area that's a Karmelis, Vaso Rosh Hashayachid, and it turns that Karmelis into a Rosh Hashayachid, because now it's Mukaf Mechitzos. Vizarek V'nachal Gabav, and you throw something and it lands not inside the Rosh Hashayachid that it's surrounding, but on the wall that's turning it into Rosh Hashayachid. Mau, so what's the halach? If you threw from Rosh Hashayachid Rabim, and it landed on a wall that's surrounding an area and turning that area into Rosh Hashanah, what's the din? Do we say, well, the wall's not four tefachim wide, so therefore it's only a makom ptur? Or maybe no, maybe that since it makes the area inside into a Rosh Hashanah, we view the whole thing as if it's filled in and it's all one giant Rosh Hashanah, including the walls. So Ula says it's a fundamental kal v'chomer. If the wall has the capacity to make the area inside of it Rosh Hashanah, it for sure has the capacity to make itself into a Rosh Hashanah. So absolutely, the walls are Rosh Hashanah. It Barnam Yom Rav Chiv Rashi Yom Rav V'chein Yom Rav Yitzchak Yom Rav Yochanan. Rav says in Rav Yochanan say, if you have a wall situated in a Rosh Hashanah that's 10 tefachim high but not 4 tefachim wide, umukav lekarmelis v'asor Rosh Hashanah, and it's surrounding a karmelis and thereby turning the karmelis into a Rosh Hashanah, hazorik v'nachal gabav chayiv. If you throw something and it lands on that wall, you're going to be chayiv. Because after all, if it has the capacity to make something else a Rosh Hashanah, so it certainly has the capacity to make itself a Rosh Hashanah. This Svara, that if it has the capacity to make something else a Rosh Hashanah, then it itself is for sure a Rosh Hashanah, comes up in the following area of halacha. There's a tshuva, a fascinating tshuva in Har Tzvi, Tzvi Pesach Frank, in Or Chaim Chelik Aleph, Simon Pei Vav, where he discusses the following. You have the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that if someone has a sukkah that only has two walls, and it's missing a third wall, so you need three walls for a sukkah. So what he could do is, he could turn one of his friends into the third wall of the sukkah, and thereby be machshir the sukkah. Tell his buddies, just, you know, stand across there, line up right there, and then they'll make the third wall of the sukkah. If it's in yantif, it has to be that they don't know that they're standing there l'shem mechitza, but on chol, they could even realize what they're doing. It could just be, he's like, I want to play a game with you, just line up there. Why? Because I said so. You know, on yantif, he doesn't, as long as they don't know why they're doing it, but on chol hamoed, even if they know why they're doing it, they count as a mechitza. You have a similar idea when it comes to Shabbos and Simon Shin Samach Beis Shulchan Aruch and Sif Hey Paskins the following. If you have a mechitza of people as far as Tiltel and Shabbos, that when you're allowed to make a mechitza even by people standing right next to each other within three tefachim of each other, within lovet of each other, and even when they're moving, it's considered a mechitza, and the area that they're surrounding is considered a Rosh Hashayachid. But since the mechitza is being done on Shabbos, it has to be that they don't know that they're being used l'shei mechitza. So if you have a group of people arm in arm, you know, making a circle around something, so the area inside that circle actually becomes a Rosh Hashanah. And mechitza of people works as far as chatzitza between a Dover Matunaf and a person who wants to say a Dover Shabakadusha. Mishabura talks about this. Mishabura says, what if you have a something that's gross, something that's you have tzawa or something that you're not allowed to say Dvar Shabakadusha in front of, but then you put a mechitza of people in between you and the tzawa? Are you now allowed to say Dvar Shabakadusha? So Mishabur says, sure, if it works for every other halach, if it works for Hilchos Sukkah, and it works for Hilchos Rishiyos of Shabbos, so it should work for this as well. It counts as a mechitza, nothing wrong with it. So in all these mechitzos that are made by men, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank discusses, okay, what about the guys that are the mechitza? Are they allowed to eat in that sukkah? Are they allowed to say Kriya Shema or say brachos when they themselves are the mechitza that is being matir the fellow on the other side? So he says that maybe it's totally in our Gemara. He said he quotes this raya from Hassan Bino, his son's son-in-law, so grandson-in-law, who discusses our Gemara, that our Gemara is such a svara that if a mechitza has the capacity to turn the area inside of it into a Rosh Hashanah, then for sure the mechitza itself is a Rosh Hashanah. So he says, if this mechitza of men has the capacity to turn the area inside of them into a sukkah, so they're also part of the sukkah. Or if they have the capacity to turn the area inside of them to a place that you're allowed to recite a bracha, or that you're allowed to be metaltel, so then they also are allowed to do it. See, basically, Frank says that the svara is not a bad svara, because what's the svara over here? What does this mean? That it's really a kal v'chomer? That if it has the capacity to be matir something else, then it itself automatically has all of those characteristics? Is that always true in every area of halacha, that when something has the ability to be matir, so then it could play the role of whatever it was matir? So let's see, if a get could be matir and isha, it's a document, so then a man is allowed to marry a document? I mean, what is that? It doesn't make any sense. Meaning, just because something could be matir, something else, it doesn't mean that it takes on all the characteristics of the matir. He says, no, what the svara really is, it's not really kavach hamisa, what the svara is that if you have a wall that's surrounding an area, the outermost surface of the wall, if you were to skim off the outermost surface of the wall, that's your wall. And everything inside the outermost surface, there's some thickness to the wall. So everything inside that mashahu of outermost surface of the wall is considered to be inside the walls already. That's why if you throw something that lands on top of the wall, it's considered to be inside the Rishon Siach. So he says the same is true with the mechitza of people, that the outermost surface of their bodies is the wall. And then everything inside of that is already inside of the walls. So if Zipes Frank thinks that it's a good svara, but he says, that he's not 100% convinced, but it's something worth considering, at least as a svara. Okay, let's see the Gemara further now. So Tzadi Tesan Beis. Again, we said that there are going to be three major shailas that come up on this daf, so we only had two so far. So now we're up to the final shaila. By Rabbi Yochanan, Bar Tisha. Let's say you have a bar that's only 9 tefachim deep. Va'akrim imenu chulia, and you pull out some dirt from the bottom of the bar. Ve'shlima la'asara, and in so doing, the bar is now 10 tefachim deep. So mahu, what's the halacha now? Akiras chefetz vasiyas mechitza badi adadi kasu u'mechayiv, is the uprooting of the dirt from the bottom of the bar and the making of the bar into a Rishus Yachid, is that considered to have come simultaneously, and therefore you're chayiv because you took from a Rishus Yachid and you brought it out into a Rishus Rabim? Olo mechayiv, or maybe you're not chayiv. Vimtim salom arkivin delo havi mechitza asar meikar lo mechayiv. And if you're going to tell me, well, since it wasn't 10 tefachim when you first approached this bar, so therefore you're not going to be chayiv, well, what about the following? What if you have the reverse? Bar asara v'nasal natocha chulya, let's say you have a bar that already is 10 tefachim, but you didn't take dirt out of it, you put dirt into the bar, from the Rishus Rabim, into that bar that used to be 10 tefachim. But now, umiyata, now the bar is only 9 tefachim deep. Mau, what's the halacha? Hanachas chefetz v'silut mechitza badi hadadi kasu u'michayiv? Do we say that it happened simultaneously and therefore you're chayiv because when the dirt started to fall into the bar, it was falling into a bar that was a Rishus HaYachid? Allah mechayiv, or maybe you're not chayiv because at the end of the day, what you're left with is a bar that is in fact not a Rishus HaYachid. So tifshal amididei, says the Gemara, why is Rabbi Yochanan asking such a shaila? Rabbi Yochanan himself made a comment once that should answer this shaila. Ditnan, because we have a Mishnah that we're going to see in tomorrow's daf. Hazorik arba amos bekosel. If you throw something 4 amos against a wall, you have a wall that's exactly 4 amos away from you in a Rosh Hashanah, and you throw something to that wall. Lemalam yasar tfachim, if it hits above 10 tfachim on the wall, kizorik ba'avir. That's like throwing it into the air. That is not a violation of being mavir dalar amos Rosh Hashanah. But lemat, if it lands on the wall within 10 tefachim of the ground, kizorik ba'aretz, that's like throwing it on the ground. Vazorik ba'aretz, arba amos, chayiv. And certainly, if you throw something 4 amos in Rosh Hashanah onto the ground, absolutely you're going to be chayiv. Va'avinan ba, so we asked about that Mishnah. Ay, v'halo nach, when you throw something against a wall, it bounces back. So where's the hanacha? There was no hanacha besov dalid. There was no hanacha at the end of dalid amos. Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan. And it's the very same Rabbi Yochanan who explains that we're talking about you threw something sticky. You threw a sticky fruit against that wall, and therefore it stuck to the side of the wall. It didn't bounce back. So I asked the Gemara, but wait a second. According to you, Rabbi Yochanan, whenever you throw something on something else and it sticks, so it just becomes part of that item, and therefore it's not 4 amos away anymore, because now the wall was just widened by the item that stuck to it. And therefore it turns out you didn't really throw it dalet amos. So it says, no, these two cases are not at all the same. Putting dirt into a bar that's 10 tefachim deep, and thereby making the bar 9 tefachim deep, or taking dirt from a bar that's 9 tefachim deep, and thereby making it 10 tefachim, is very different than throwing a dvei l'shmeina against a wall. Hasam la mevatalei, hacha mevatalei. When you throw it against the wall, you don't plan on leaving it there forever. It's not becoming part of the wall. Over here, when you put dirt into a bar, it's becoming part of the bar. So Bai Rava, Rava raises the following shaila. Zorak daf v'nachal gabi yesedos, a similar shaila, so that's why I only called it three shailas, but I guess you can count this as a fourth shaila in Amud Beis. You throw a board that's 4x4 tfachim, and it lands on top of pegs that are 10 tfachim high. So Mao, what's the halacha now? Meaning, the pegs that are 10 tefachim high don't have a space of 4x4, so they are not a Rosh HaSiyachid. But once a board that's 4x4 tefachim lands on top of them, so now it's 10 tefachim off the ground, 4x4 tefachim wide, now it's a Rosh HaSiyachid. So you picked up this board, you threw it from a Rosh HaSarabim, and it landed right on those pegs. So the question is, did you violate the malacha of Hachnasa? May kami violate. So Anachas Chavetz Vasiyas Mechitza Badi Adadi Kasu. Hainu, Rabbi Yochanan, what kind of new shaila is this? This is exactly the shaila that Rabbi Yochanan asked digging from a bar that was previously 9 tefachim and now becomes 10 tefachim. It's the same exact shaila. So it says, no, kikam bayle the Rava could go into Zarek daf the chifetz al gabav. Rava's shaila was one step further. Rava says, okay, let's say you're putter in that case. Let's say you're putter if you take dirt from a bar that used to be 9 tefachim and now it's 10 tefachim, because when you started it wasn't a Rosh HaSiyachid. And therefore, yeah, I agree, you'd be putter if you take a board that's 4x4 tefachim and you throw it and it lands on top of a post. Here's my shayla. What if there's an object on top of that board and you threw the board with the object on it onto that post? Are you chayiv for the hachnasa of the object? So that's his shayla. Do we say, the object and the board landed at the same time because you threw them together and therefore you're going to be potter? Or do we say that no, if there's an object on the board, no matter how gentle you are in throwing it, when it landed on the post, the object must have jumped a little bit. From impact on the post, when the board hit the post, the object must have jumped. And therefore, when the object jumped up and landed back on the board, there's your malacha, that you transfer something to Rosh HaSiyachid. That's Rava's Shaila, and Teku, the Gemara, leaves that unresolved. So Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up two lines from the bottom of the page at Amar Rava. A good tovach, everybody.